Welcome to Zichud Daf Siman. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldar, and today we're Masechet Shabbos, Daf Kuf Gimel. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, in the Mishnah on Kuf Beis Amud Beis, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel stated that one who strikes with a hammer on an anvil while working is chayev, because he's like one who improves the work he's doing. The Gemara seeks to understand what act is he doing that makes him liable, and brings Abai and Rava, who both say that banging a hammer on an anvil is considered a malacha, as that is what those who pounded the sheets of gold for the Mishkan did. Rashi explains that after every three strikes on the sheet done to thin them, the smiths would strike once on an anvil to ensure the surface of the hammer remained smooth and would not puncture the sheets. He adds that coin manufacturers in his own locale did this. Point number two, the second Mishnah on the Daf states that one who writes two letters with either his right or left hand is chayev. The Gemara asks why one is chayev for writing with his left hand, since it's not the normal manner for writing. Rabbi Yirmi suggests that the Mishnah is referring to a left-handed person, an iter yad. But this is rejected because then he should not be liable for writing with his right hand. So Abai answered that the Mishnah is dealing with an ambidextrous person. And the Riffa asks, why then is the Mishnah not obvious? He explains that Abai is referring to someone who favors one hand, but is somewhat proficient with the other. Rav Yaakov, the son of Yaakov's daughter, said the author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi, who said that one who writes two letters is chayev because of making a roshim, a marking. Since making mere marks can be done perfectly well with the left hand, it is a normal matter to also use one's left hand, and therefore he's chayev. And point number three, in the same Mishnah regarding the malach of ksiba, of writing, Rabbi Yehuda states that we find a short word that is part of a long word, such as Shem from Shimon or Shmuel, or Noach from Nachor, or Dan from Daniel, or God from Gadiel. Rashi explains that Rabbi Yehuda is coming to teach that even though the writer did not complete the word he intended, he is chayev if the letters he wrote comprise a short word. The Gemara asks how one could be chayev for writing Shem from Shimon, since the Mem from Shem is closed, it's Sasum, and the Mem from Shimon is open, it's Pasuach. Rav Chisda says that this teaches that if a sofer wrote a closed letter as an open letter, it is valid. So once again, the three points are, number one, in the Mishnah on Kuf Beis Amud Beis, Rav Shimon Gamliel stated that one who strikes with a hammer on an anvil while working is chayev because he's like one who improves the work he is doing. The Gemara seeks to understand what act is he doing that makes him liable, and brings Abai and Rav, who both say that banging a hammer on an anvil is considered a malacha, as that is what those who pounded the sheets of gold for the Mishkan did. And Rashi explains that after every three strikes on the sheet done to thin them, the smiths would strike once on an anvil to ensure the surface of the hammer remained smooth and would not puncture the sheets. He adds that coin manufacturers in his own locale did this. Point number two, the second Mishnah on the Daf states that one who writes two letters with either his right hand or his left hand is chayev. The Gemara asks, why is one chayev for writing with his left hand, since that's not the normal way for writing? Rabbi Yirmiya suggests that the Mishnah is referring to a left-handed person, but this is rejected because then he should not be liable for writing with his right hand. So Abai answers that the Mishnah is dealing with an ambidextrous person. And the Riffa asks, why then is the Mishnah not obvious? Now he explains that Abai is referring to someone who favors one hand, but is somewhat proficient with the other. Rabbi Yaakov, the son of Yaakov's daughter, said, the author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yosu, who said that one who writes two letters is chayev, because he's making a roshim, a marking. Since making mere marks can be done perfectly well with the left hand, it is normal manner to also use one's left hand, and therefore he's chayev. And point number three, in the same Mishnah regarding the malach of ksiva, of writing, Rav Yehuda states that we find a short word that is part of a long word, such as Shem from Shimon, or Shmuel, Noach from Nachor, Dan from Daniel, and God from Gadiel. Rashi explains that Rav Yehuda is coming to teach that even though the writer did not complete the word he intended, he is chayev if the letters he wrote comprise a short word. And the Gemara asks how one can be chayev for writing Shem from Shimon, since the Mem from Shem is closed, it's Sasim, and the Mem from Shimon is open, it's Pasuach. Rav Chisda says that this teaches that if a sofer wrote a closed letter as an open letter, it is valid. All right, so now we got our sim for Kuf Gimel, and we had a lot of different suggestions. We had kilograms, we had cogs, kegs, cages, a cage fighter or a warrior. We had Kugelach, and we had Nathaniel Jacob from Great Neck suggested Sigmund Freud because of cognition. But the most popular one was some form of kugel, a potato kugel, Yerushalmi kugel. Jed Zasla from Philadelphia suggested a greasy kugel salesman. I thought it was very funny, Jed. But we're going to go with, in this case, kugel. I'm going to make it Yerushalmi kugel. But thank you, everybody, for your suggestions. So those suggested some form of kugel. That's going to be our sim for Kuf Gimel, Yerushalmi kugel. So here goes. The goldsmith who kept his hammer smooth by banging on the frozen Yerushalmi kugel could write with his left hand, too, provided he could write short words like Shem instead of Shimon. Once again, it's slow motion. The goldsmith who kept his hammer smooth by banging it on the frozen Yerushalmi kugel, that means Ron Duff, Kuf Gimel. The goldsmith who kept his hammer smooth by banging on the frozen Yerushalmi kugel, which reminds us, in the Mishnah on Kuf Beis Amud Beis, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel stated that one who strikes with a hammer on an anvil while working is chayiv because he's like one who improves the work he's doing. The Gemara seeks to understand what act is he doing that makes him liable and brings a bain Rava, who both say that banging a hammer on an anvil is considered a malacha, as that is what those who pounded the sheets of gold for the Mishkan did. Rashi explains that after every three strikes on the sheet done to thin them, the smiths would strike once on an anvil to ensure the surface of the hammer remained smooth and would not puncture the sheets. And he adds that coin manufacturers in his own locale did this. So the goldsmith who kept his hammer smooth by banging it on the frozen Yerushalmi kugel could write with his left hand too, which reminds us, the second mission of the Daf states, the one who writes two letters with either his right or left hand is chayiv. The Gemara asks why one is chayiv for writing with his left hand, since it's not the normal manner for writing. Rabbi Yirmiyah suggests that the mission is referring to a left-handed person, but this is rejected because then he should not be liable for writing with his right hand. So Abaye answers the mission is dealing with an ambidextrous person, and the Rava asks, why then is the mission not obvious? He explains that Abaye is referring to someone who favors one hand, but is somewhat proficient with the other. Rabbi Yaakov, the son of Yaakov's daughter, said the author of the mission is Rabbi Yosi, who said that one who writes two letters is chayiv because of making a roshim, a marking. Since making mere marks can be done perfectly well with the left hand, it's the normal manner to also use one's left hand, and therefore he's chayiv. So the goldsmith who kept his hammer smooth by banging it on the frozen Yerushalmi kugel could write with his left hand too, provided he could write short words like Shem instead of Shimon. Which reminds us, in the same mission regarding the Malach of Ksiva of writing, Rav Yehuda states that we find a short word that is part of a long word, such as Shem from Shimon, or Shmuel, or Noach from Nachor, or Dan from Daniel, or God from Gadiel. Rashi explains that Rav Yehuda is coming to teach that even though the writer did not complete the word he intended, he is chayiv if the letters he wrote comprise a short word. The Gemara asks how one could be chayiv for writing Shem from Shimon, since the mem from Shimon is closed, it's sasim, and the mem from Shimon is open, it's pesuach. Rav Chissa says that this teaches that if a sofer wrote a closed letter as an open letter, it is valid. So once again, the goldsmith who kept his hammer smooth by banging on the frozen Yerushalmi kugel could write with his left hand too, provided he could write short words like Shem instead of Shimon. All right, now it's time for a four blah bah hazara. Daf Tzadi Tes. So the Simfat Tzadi Tes is a cheetah. So here goes. The cheetah, that means we're on Daf Tzadi Tes. The cheetah that escaped from the zoo jumped over two spaced out wagons in Rishus of Rabbim, which reminds us. Abai said that the space between one agala, one wagon, and the agala beside it equaled the length of an agala, which was 5 amos. Therefore, the total space occupied by the two agalas and the space between them was 15 amos. The Gemara asks, why then is it an established principle that a Rishus of Rabbim is 16 amos? And answers that the extra amma width on the road traveled by the agalos was where a levy would stand, so that if one of the crushing began to slide off, he could set it right. So the cheetah that escaped from the zoo jumped over two spaced-out wagons in Rishus Rabim and landed in a thin-walled Rishus Yachid, which reminds us. Rabbi Yochanan asks what the law is in a case where there's a wall in Rishus Rabim that is 10 tefachim high, but not 4 tefachim wide, and it surrounds a karmelis, thereby making the karmelis a Rishus Yachid. And someone standing in Rishus of Rabim threw an object and it landed on top of the wall. Do we say that since the wall is not 4 tefachim wide, the top of the wall is makom patur, and the person is exempt? Or do we say that since the wall made the karmelis a Rishus Yachid, it's as though the enclosed area is filled to the top of the wall, making the top of the wall a mere extension of the 4 tefachim surface, so to speak, adjacent to it on the inside, and therefore the thrower is liable? Ula answered and said that if the wall forms a partition for other areas, all the more so will do it for itself as well. Therefore, the thrower would be liable for throwing it on top of the wall. So the cheetah that escaped from the zoo jumped over two spaced-out wagons in Rishus Rabim and landed in a thin-walled Rishus Yachid, kicking up dirt that landed in a pit 10 tefachim deep. Which reminds us, Rabbi Yochanan asks what the law is in a case where someone in Rishus Rabim threw dirt into a 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide pit, which has the status of Rishus Yachid, and by throwing the dirt into it, he reduced the depth of the pit to less than 10 tefachim, thereby making it having less than the necessary measurement to be a Rishus Yachid. Do we view it as if the earth were thrown into a Rishus Yachid or not? According to Rashi, Rabbi Yochanan wants to know if the negation of the pit status as a Rishus Yachid at the moment the earth comes to rest in the pit exempts the thrower. The Gemara attempts to resolve Rabbi Yochanan's question, but is not successful.
Dav Kuf. So the symbol for Dav Kuf is a monkey. So here goes. The curious monkey, that means we're on Dav Kuf. The curious monkey threw his banana towards a pit filled with water, not fruit, which reminds us. Abai said that if there was a pit in Rishus Rabim that was 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide, meaning it's a Rishus Yachid, and it's full of water, and someone threw an object into it, he's chayiv. However, if it was full of produce, he is pater. The Gemara explains that the water in the pit does not nullify its mechitzas, its partitions, whereas the fruit does. And Rashi explains that in the case of the fruit, it's as if the pit is filled to its top with earth. So the curious monkey threw his banana towards a pit filled with water, not fruit. When a strong wind blew it back out to sea, which reminds us, the Mishnah states that if one was standing in Rishus Rabim, he threw an object within 4 amos, but it was propelled by the wind to a point beyond 4 amos, he's putter. If he threw the object beyond 4 amos, and the wind blew it back to within 4 amos, he's chayev. The Gemara asks how the thrower in the second case can be liable if the object never came to rest outside of Dalet Amos. Rabbi Yochanan answers that it rested briefly, and a braisa supports Rabbi Yochanan and states that one would be liable even if the wind held the object in mid-air for a moment, provided the object was within 3 tefachim of the ground, where the principle of chavud is operative. So the curious monkey threw his banana towards a pit filled with water, not fruit, when a strong wind blew it back and out to sea, where a ship was drawing water on board with a bucket. Which reminds us, there's a machlokes amoraim regarding how one may draw water from the sea on board a ship on Shabbos. Rav Huna said that one may extend a small rod from the ship and fill a bucket of water and bring it on board. Rav Chisda and Rav Abba Rav Huna said that one may make an enclosed area 4 tefachim over the water and fill the bucket through that area. And the Gemara explains that according to Rav Huna, the 10 tefachim height of a karmelis at sea is measured from the floor of the sea. Therefore, the part of the sea that is above those 10 tefachim is a makom patur. It's therefore permitted to draw water from the sea into the boat, which is a rishus yachid. The rod only serves as a heker, as a reminder that it's forbidden to transfer from a karmelis to a rishus yachid. According to Rav Chisda and Rav Abba Rav Huna, the 10 tefachim of a karmelis is measured from the water's surface, and therefore, if one would draw water from the sea to the boat, he's bringing water from a karmelis to a rishus yachid, which is forbidden. Consequently, water needs to be drawn through a 4 tefachim wide enclosed area. Daf Kufalf. So the symbol for Kufalf is a bird caller going caw, caw. So here goes. The bird caller who could only carry his cawing raven. Bird caller and a cawing raven, that means we're on Daf Kufalf. The bird caller could only carry his cawing raven Dalet Amos in the small boat from Meishan, which reminds us, Rav Huna said that in the small boats of Meishan, which was a small river that only small boats could go on, one may only carry Dalet Amos because they have the status of a karmelis. These boats were wide at the top but narrowed to a point like a canoe at the bottom, and since the bottom was not 4 tefachim wide, its walls lose their status as legal partitions, as mechitzos, and the walls above are considered a mechitza tzuya, a suspended wall, which is not considered a legal partition. Therefore, the boat is considered a karmelis and not a rishus yachid. Rav Huna continues that the boat would have the status of a rishus yachid if the 4 tefachim width of the walls was within 3 tefachim of the bottom of the boat, which would raise the base of the ship through the principle of lavet. Alternatively, says Rav Huna, one could fill the base of his boat with reeds and willow branches until the point where the boat widens to 4 tefachim. So the bird caller, who could only carry his cawing raven Dalet Amos in the small boat's formation, failed to turn it into a rishus yachid by extending its walls downwards, which reminds Rav Nachman challenged Rav Huna, suggesting that the principle of good achiz mechitzasa, extending the walls downward, should apply, which legally extends the walls of the boat down to the ground below so that they are not legally considered suspended. Since the top of the boat's width is 4 tefachim wide, the principle of good achiz would extend the walls down at that width, giving the boat a status of rishus yachid and not a karmelis. So the bird caller could only carry his cawing raven Dalet Amos in the small boats from Meishan, failed to turn it into rishus yachid by extending its walls downwards, so he made an eruv together with another boat. Which reminds us, Rasafa clarifies that in the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Amud Beis, that stated that it's permitted to carry between ships that are tied together, was referring to a case where the ships have different owners, and the Mishnah is coming to teach that it's permitted to make an eruv. The Gemara brings a braisa to support Rav Safra that states that in the case of 2 ships tied together, their owners may make an eruv and carry between the boats. If the boats were to be separated, then the eruv would be negated. If they are once again tied together, whether inadvertently, deliberately, unwillingly, or accidentally, then the eruv is automatically reestablished and it is permitted to carry between them. Daf Kuf Beis. So the symbol for Kuf Beis is a caveman. So here goes. The caveman, that means we're on Daf Kuf Beis. The caveman who remembered it was Shabbos after he threw his ball of clay, which reminds us, the final admission in the Perek states that if one threw an object and then remembered it was Shabbos after it left his hand before it landed, and another person caught it, or a dog caught it, or it got burned before it landed, he's putter from bringing a chattis. Similarly, if one threw an object with the intent to injure a person or an animal, which he would then be liable for causing a bruise on Shabbos, and then remembered it was Shabbos after it left his hand, he is putter. The Mishnah concludes with a call that all who are liable for a chattis are not liable unless the beginning and the completion of their action was done b'shogeg. So the caveman remembered it was Shabbos after he threw his ball of clay, carried it back to the cave 2 amos b'shogeg, 2 amos b'mezid, and 2 amos b'shogeg. which reminds us that there's a machlokas amoraim in a case where one transports an object two amas b'shogeg, two amas b'mezid, and then two amas b'shogeg. Rava says he's pacha, whereas Rava says he is chayiv. Just one point of correction here from yesterday. The Gemara concludes that there is no argument, and Rava and Rava are discussing two different cases. Rava says that in the case where one carries the object, he's pater, and even according to Rav Gamliel, who holds ein yedil chetzi shir, there is no awareness for a half measure, and therefore two half measures combined to make one chayev. This principle only applies in a case where one wrote one letter b'shogeg, became aware of his sin, and then wrote a second letter b'shogeg. Since the second letter was also written b'shogeg, Rav Gamliel holds that he's liable. In our case, though, the person is completing the four amas b'mezid, and therefore he is not liable for a chatas. Rava says that in a case where the person threw the object, he is liable, and even the Rabbanan who hold of Yesh Yediyah L'chatzishir would say he is liable. In the case of the writing, the writer was in control in choosing to write the second letter. Therefore, his forgetting that in Shabbos renders the writing a separate act, and the two writings do not combine to make him chayiv. Here, however, in the case of throwing the object, he's no longer in control of retrieving the object, and therefore the entire transfer is regarded as one act, b'shogeg. So the caveman remembered it was Shabbos after he threw his ball of clay, carried it back to the cave two amas b'shogeg, two amas b'mezid, and two amas b'shogeg to seal a small hole in his wall. Which reminds us, the opening mission of the Perek of Habona states that one is liable for the malacha of Bona for building if he builds even a kolshu, even a minimal amount. The Gemara asks, what use is building a minimal amount? And after rejecting two answers, concludes with the opinion of Achabar Yaakov, who said that someone with a large home who has a hole in the wall will seal it with clay. And a similar thing was done in the construction of the Mishkan when a craftsman would pour molten lead into a small hole in a beam that a worm had bored. All right, so now it's time to conclude our pop quiz of 10 questions plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachas. Number 1, which daf do we learn that striking a hammer on an anvil is a malacha that's on daf? Kuf Gimel. Good. Number 2, which daf do we have a malachos regarding how to draw water onto a ship? That's on daf. Kuf. Good. Number 3. Which daf do we learn that to be chayv a chatas, it must be tchilasim v'sofan shkaga? That's on daf. Kuf Beis. Good. Number 4. Which daf do we discuss a case where one threw dalet amos when he intended to throw 8 amos? That's on daf. Tzadi Zayin. Good. Number 5. Which daf do we learn that one is chayv for writing with one's right or left hand? That's on daf. Kuf Gimel. Good. Number 6. Which daf do we have a question about what the status is of a thin wall of a Rishus Yachid? That's on daf. Tzadi Tes. Good. Number 7. Which daf do we learn that one is chayav for boni even for a kol shehu? That's on daf. Kuf Beis. Good. Number 8. Which daf do we learn that the small boats of Meishan have a din of a carmelis and one can only walk dalet amos? That's on daf. Kufalov. Good. Number 9. Which daf do we learn one is chai for carrying something above 10 tefachim in Rishus HaRabim, learn from B'nai Kahas? That's on daf. Tzadi Beis. Good. And final question number 10. Which daf do we learn that one can be chai even when wind blows an object? That's on daf. Kuf. Good. Now we go to the 3 bonus questions from Mesechus Brachas. Number 1. Which daf do we have a malchus regarding the bracha achrona for the zayin meaning? That's on daf. Lamed Zayin. Good. Number 2. Which daf do we learn that one should not be botzea, the bread, before everybody responds amen? That's on daf. Mem Zayin. Good. And final question number 3. Which daf we have a machlokas regarding when a meal is considered over? The Gemara Suda. That's on daf. Mem Beis. Excellent. All right. That concludes our pop quiz, plus the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachas. This is Rabbi Avram Goldhar from Zichru, wishing you a great day and great learning.